Hello and welcome to the Majlis Ready for Your Pre Liberties Current Affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Ready for Your Pre Liberties media manager here in Washington, D.C. As Kazakhstan gearing up for the parliamentary elections under the current President Qasym Jomart Tokayev, signs are that there will be little, if any, change in the way elections are usually held in Kazakhstan. None of the five political parties which are on the ballot label itself as an opposition party. In opposition, politicians are demanding the election to be postponed or completely staying away from the entire process. It won't be a surprise if the ruling Nur Otan party win the majority, but it will be interesting to see how members of the opposition or civil society will react to the outcome. Given there have been growing discontent among opponents of the government as the hopes of openness largely faded away, which some anticipated with Nazarbayev stepping aside from the active politics. 2 weeks to go until the election day. Today we are here to discuss the political atmosphere on the ground, the scenarios going forward, and what's at stake in the country. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Dr. Lukan Cheshi, Senior Lecturer in Central Asian Studies at the Glasgow University, Sofia Do Bole, PhD candidate at the Oxford Brookes University. Sofia's research involves the study of legitimization, authoritarian durability, and politics in Central Asia in South Caucasus. Sofia is originally from Kazakhstan. Darkhan Omirbekov is joining us from Astana. Darkhan is senior journalist with Radio Free Radio Liberties Kazakh service, Radio Azatik, and Bruce Spanier, the editor of Radio Free Radio Liberties Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Bruce is joining us from Prague. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us today. So, Darkhan, let's start with you. So, how things are on the ground in terms of the election cycle? What kind of preparations are underway for the big day?
So right now we are going through the debate period. Like the parties are having the debate among competitors, which is aired on state TV, and people view them as boring, and I don't see the real interesting trends going around the election campaign. So basically people's view is that there is no real opposition. And there was one, the OSDP party, and the opposition politician Mukhtar Ablyazov, who is right now in France.
But his party is not registered to compete in the election, right?
Yeah, and he called his supporters to join the party, OSDP, and become a force. Hmm. And the next day, the party said that they are not going to the election.
They decided to boycott the election.
Yeah. And people, like, for many critics of the regime, the rest of the parties, they're just marionette parties, and they will do everything the Nur Otan would tell them. And the leaders of those parties they publicly credit Nazarbayev, they praise Nur Otan, and they accept Nur Otan's position, and they cannot answer the basic question: if you are happy with Nur Otan's policy, why are you going to compete with them? No one is answering that question. And instead, like, they're saying, oh, we're going to the parliament election just to raise questions and air people's grievances, bottom line of their statements.
You said they are debating at the moment. So yeah. What they are really debating about then?
I haven't seen minute by minute, but they didn't touch the basic political questions. Just most of them were social topics, like the well-being of people, and that kind of questions. No one asked a question about Nazarbayev's ruling, Nazarbayev's families, and other stuff, and no one held Nur Otan party responsible for failures for fighting against coronavirus pandemic, in fighting against corruption, etc., etc. I mean, there wasn't a real debate like we see in the United States or in the UK.
Bruce, I guess there are a lot to be debated if there were to be a genuine debate there. I mean, what has been highlights and lowlights of the process so far from your point of view?
Well, I mean, yeah, there are many topics that could be that should be on the agenda whenever they're getting a debate up there. But of course, they're not going to touch anything that's bad news. So the response to the healthcare crisis, the response to the slowdown of the economy, which all includes, of course, the healthcare crisis. A lot of people were out of work and still are, and the government has been. I suppose to their credit, they have given a lot of people some money, not very much, but then they just kind of slowed down on that. It's an economic slowdown like there is everywhere across the board. And then, of course, that report, RFBRL just did that one report, although that wealth of the Nazarbayev family and his friends has been coming out off and on over the news for a couple of years. So this just, angers people more. Like Darhan said, the parties competing against Nurultan are a joke. So no one thinks they're going to do well. For instance, there's 98 seats up for grabs, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and Nurultan has 126 candidates for those 98 seats. But a lot of parties, like Adal, the formerly known as Birlik, has like I think 16 candidates. Akçol has 38 candidates. The AHİL party has 19 candidates. So it's pretty preposterous just from the start to look at it on paper. Nurultan's always gotten the most votes. That said, and I'll wrap this up like real quick, but it's worth noting that this is the first parliamentary election when Nazarbayev isn't president of the country. And people have been out protesting, certainly after Tokayev came to power. They would have been probably, especially now, except for, the lockdown and the coronavirus. Otherwise, I think things would have been a little more restive. Not to say they would have been out of control, but there would have been a lot more opposition activity in the lead up to this election.
Okay, interesting. Sophia, we usually have like kind of free-floating discussion, so just don't wait for me to invite you for any if anyone anything
thank
you
you.
would like to add
Thank you very
into.
much, Mohammed. It sounds like we will be talking today about boring and predictable elections, but I think we should ask ourselves some more nuanced questions or why these elections are still important in authoritarian state, even though we know sort of the outcome. I think, first of all, and I am using it quite deliberately, Nazarbayev regime is trying to use this parliamentary elections as a pragmatic instrument for regime legitimation. It's also is representative marker of domination, and I think it is a symbolic spectacle of democracy. Even though authoritarian regimes can't produce and don't want to produce a competitive agenda, they want to imitate one. And to that degree, I think it is important to look into this sort of parliamentary election, even though we know it's only one party game in town.
Sure, but they have to do it for their own purpose. But no one is really buying this, isn't it? I mean, we know that the outcome is sort of already decided until the point that how many seats will go to which party. And of course, we know Nurultan is going to win the majority. So if Kazakh authorities are trying to kind of play with the democracy, no one is really buying it. But why they have to do it? I mean, why?
I really like the term that Andrey Chebatarev, a political scientist from Kazakhstan, used. He called this upcoming election as "внутренний элитный междусобойчик," which is inter-elite get-together, where elites themselves are choosing how much seats they're gonna allocate to each other. And the question here is who's gonna win the second sort of seat rather than the first, and it's
We
not
don't.
really
We don't. We are. I guess we
final
already know it, right?
power. Well, the second one after Nurultan, I'm meaning.
Okay, let's see. Dr. Luca, yeah, it's been a long time since we had you on the show. Thank you very much for coming back. But please add your thoughts into what we have been talking about so far. And also, just one more point I had in mind before we move on: opposition parties. I mean, particularly Halk Birliği. I guess that's the one of the opposition parties that had a press conference yesterday or before yesterday, calling for even postponing this election, saying that there is no equal opportunity for all the parties to join the election and compete fair and freely. And the other parties, a number of other opposition parties, they are already boycotting the entire process. Also, Sofia's point, we already know the type of election exercise Kazakhstan had in the past. So what are the calculation behind how things are proceeding from the perspective of rulers in Kazakhstan?
Well, I like to compare the election of next month in Kazakhstan to the parliamentary election we saw last year in Uzbekistan, because I think that it gives you a very good idea of regime trajectory. And in December 20, 2019 elections in Uzbekistan, you had exactly the same environment in which you have a number of parties and candidates handpicked by the regime who discussed any kind of agenda and, you know, and were part, you know, of a performative political gesture, which is, you know, election without democracy. But in Uzbekistan, people were happy. At least there was some kind of positive spin to be given this election, because what they had before was much more depressing. Whereas if we look at what's happening now in Kazakhstan, there is a real problem of stagnation in the politics of the place. And you have an election in which there is no competition. The parties are handpicked. Unlike Uzbekistan, you even have an hegemonic party, a party which will take the biggest number of seats. So they will probably end up not counting the votes either. And the people are protesting, calling for boycotts, and not recognizing any kind of legitimacy to this exercise. So to me, like, of course, what we saw in Uzbekistan wasn't positive by any way, shape or form insofar as the democratic accountability. But at least compared with the prior practice, this was a step ahead. Whereas the expectation that the Kazakh polity at large has when it comes to their role in the society, in the political debate, have been systematically crushed by this regime. And to me, it's even more problematic, because Tokayev has been many times presented himself, or tried at least to do so, to present himself as a man of reform, a man of change. And what we're seeing is not only more of the same, but we're seeing something which is less and less relevant for the daily lives of the people. I mean, Bruce was right in having a regime-controlled campaign. Does not facilitate any kind of discussion of the real problems of the place. Having all of the further restrictions which we've seen imposed on either internet providers or internet users, and on NGOs have been taxed, and all the kind of fiscal issue which we've seen, it's a way to use election to further crush any kind of antagonist view. So to me, to conclude, this is an exercise of a regime which is in decline. It's in decline notwithstanding the leadership change process, and is a sign that things, unfortunately, to come from Kazakhstan are not going to be positive, because we're going to see a lot of problems when it comes in establishing any kind of relationship between the regime and the opposition.
Right. Speaking of opposition, Darhan, let me bring you in here. Maybe Bruce, if you would like, please jump in here. What I have in mind is here, as all of you are kind of hinting, I mean, the process which is taking place next month on January 10th, it's nowhere close to fair and free. I mean, how opposition is responding to this? I mean, one thing is, yes, they are saying boycott the election or maybe postpone the election, but it's not going to happen. So how they are responding to the situation and how you see their response?
In my view, there is no opposition as an institution like we see in other developed countries.
So are they, Darhan, are they doing anything about it?
I don't see anything. I mean, my point is that there is no opposition as an institution, but there are figures, well-known figures, that prove themselves as vocal critics of Nazarbayev, like Rasbek Sarsenbayev, like Guljan Yergaliyeva. They held press conference calling to boycott the election. But rather than that, I don't see anything. Maybe Bruce has something to
Bruce,
add.
But yeah, please go ahead, Bruce, on that question. Also, how do you see, I mean, you know, the way Darhan just explained that, I mean, there is no really any activity taking place other than calling for boycott or, I don't know, postponing the election. I mean, that's not going to happen. The election will happen despite the calls by the opposition. But how do you see, I mean, the opposition or the activists' response to what's going on, what's going to happen?
Well, you know, Mukhtar Ablazov, of course, has been, you know, Darhan was right. I mean, he can't take an active hand. No one in his party is, because he's outside the country. But, I mean, he did tell all his supporters from the Democratic Choice of Kazakhstan, which, of course, is a banned movement in Kazakhstan, that they should vote for the nationwide Social Democratic Party of Kazakhstan, which was, I suppose, nominally an opposition party. But in any case, they dropped out of the race. So that didn't matter. And then he wanted his supporters to then go for Akjol, but people heard that, and so they closed their party to any new members to keep Ablaza people out, essentially. The opposition hasn't been like dormant in Kazakhstan, but the authorities have resorted to their usual tactic of heading this stuff off. You know, I mean, Kazakhstan, every time they've had some significant date where they thought there was going to be protests or something, they go days in advance and pick up activists and, you know, anyone they suspect could foment some kind of trouble ahead of the event. And it's been clear from just following the people I follow on Twitter that they've been detaining a number of several dozen, it looks like, activists already. And they've warned other ones, too. So, you know, and this is well in advance. And I would imagine, you know, so this is something that everyone expects, not, you know, weeks before the election, but it's something that's happened regularly. But it shows again that the authorities are taking the threat of possible protests seriously enough that they've started acting well in advance, you know, and they're hoping the message gets out. I imagine that, you know, if you're planning on coming out in opposition and publicly demonstrating or something, you might not even get out to the street before we pick you up and, you know, put you in detention.
That's true, Bruce. But again, what happened to those young activists, Oyan, Kazakhstan, Kahraman? What happened to them? I mean, when they were organizing these big rallies, in the context of Kazakhstan, I mean, then too, they were not allowed to organize those things, but they did it anyway. What changed now?
Like I said, one, you know, Kahraman is one of the groups that's been complaining that its activists have been harassed and detained. But, you know, the authorities, like they have in several countries, not just Kazakhstan, but I mean, they use the pandemic and the coronavirus as a way to keep people out. You can't demonstrate or you can't go outside, and they can pick you up right away. Because, you know, if you're 10 or 20 people, they can pick you up not because you're demonstrating, but because you're 10 or 20 people gathered together on the street and you represent a health risk. So it's, you know, it's tough to get out there right now. And of course, the activists themselves, I imagine, would be a little concerned about going out and in a large group at this point. So it's, you know, if it hadn't been for the pandemic, I'm sure things would probably be different than they are. But it does give the authorities a lot more latitude in detaining people if they do see them start to show up. And like I said, anyway, they know who a lot of these people are, and they've been in contact with them or detained them already.
Yeah, you know, but Darkhan, you earlier already said that the way those debates are happening between the state's approved candidates, it's kind of funny to call it a debate. But speaking of the debate, Darkhan, and issues, Arafyarl has just released a huge investigation where details about previously unknown properties belonging to Nazarbayev family are revealed. You know, they are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. If not in the political debates, are they discussed in any way in the context of election in the public level? What I'm trying to understand is, has there been any reaction? Has anyone surprised by the amount of wealth Nazarbayev family is sitting on?
So Kazakhs always suspected Nazarbayev and his family had luxury assets abroad, but one thing when you just suspect and one thing when you prove and illustrate those assets, I think it contributed a lot in shaping Nazarbayev's overall legacy in making Kazakhstan statehood. And that legacy wasn't always negative for many Kazakhs. They credit him for stability, for having fixed the border with all five neighboring countries and other so-called strategic decisions.
Sure, but Darkhan, what I had in mind was, has this surprised anyone in the country? Was there any reaction to these revelations?
I mean, if we compare the reaction with other countries, like what's happening in Moscow right now with Navalny stuff and with United States or UK, nothing is happening. Just people are sharing how terrible is that and they're commenting and criticizing Nazarbayev. Other than that, there is no protest, there is no demonstration, and yeah. That's it.
Yeah, Darkhan, since we are talking about this report, can you also briefly share some of the highlights of what report are we talking about, or what kind of revelations are we talking about here?
So RTRL's team revealed and showed the luxurious properties belonging to Nazarbayev himself and his family, including his son-in-law Timur Kulubayev, the billionaire, and his younger brother Bulat Nazarbayev, and their properties in Spain, France, New York, Florida, Switzerland, and it shows that we have like photos and videos of those properties. These are the very expensive properties, and they're just, I think they're meant to be assets, not a house to live for them. We have the right, the address, and the cost of the property, and when they were bought, and who they belong to, if I'm describing it in a brief way. So that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what we are talking about here is the assets or the properties worth $750 million. That's what, that's what we know, but we, you know, there could be lots of other things that we don't know. So the investigation is really revealing, particularly in the context of how much money do these people have in the way they are spending those money abroad by buying properties and assets. Anyway, the report is out and available on RFRL's website for your review. I would really encourage our audience to go and check out. So, Dr. Luca.
Can I go back to the opposition for a second?
Go ahead.
I think that we need to start making a more general points on the opposition in Central Asia, full stop. Of course, we're talking about Kyrgyzstan, leave it to you, four at least, very repressive landscapes where doing any kind of antagonistic or alternative or opposition activities, it's quite difficult. So the great majority of the responsibility for the creation of this monopolistic landscape, it's up to the regime because they're not happy to share powers, not to encourage the dialogue. But I think that when it comes to Kazakhstan particularly, we've seen in the past an extreme fragmentation of the opposition forces. I mean, now, when I was doing my research on the anti-Eurasianism forces, I spent a lot of time with Kazakh nationalists, and which some of them eventually got into that Jana Kazakhstan, I think it's called, group, New Kazakhstan. And but I haven't heard from them, no last year, no this year. And I asked around, and it seemed to me that each one of them are pursuing their own independent agendas. So, which means that the people who were left in the street last year after the Nazarbayev resignation were kind of young, disorganized, and certainly fragmented. So it's clear that this is the kind of opposition that the regime wants, but I haven't really seen any kind of push for coordination and congruence when it comes to their activities. So there is obviously a problem. There is a problem of activism, full stop. There is a lot going on. I'm not disputing that. There is a lot going on, especially in Kazakhstan. People are talking. It's a relatively free environment. There is a lot of political cult, political activism, but it doesn't seem to be enough. And those who are outside of the country, like the people that got mentioned before, seem to be more concerned with power rather than with real debate. So, I mean, obviously, there is a lot to do with the way in which the regime and their brutality and their repression, the framework that they produce in terms of legislative efforts. But I think that a closer look for those of us who care about the region, the work on the region or in the region, we should ask ourselves, how come we got 30, next year is 30 years of independence? We haven't been able to see any kind of sustained opposition, you know, in those little spaces that the various regimes have left.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we just for a minute go back into, you know, our previous majlis, which we might have had like 5 years ago or 4 years ago, just ahead of a similar election process in Kazakhstan, but I just kind of guess we might have been talking very much about the same issues. So is there anything has changed in this election? Of course, Darkhan wanting to say something about this. And also, Sofia, has anything changed the way this is happening, the way opposition is handling this, the way authorities are handling this election compared to the last parliamentary election?
May I start, Darkhan, if you don't mind? Just to reiterate what Luca was saying, that I think Tokayev understands that the stability that he inherited from Nazarbayev is bordering slowly with stagnation. Therefore, he tries to revitalize it and change and introduce something new.
But
and
it
I
doesn't
think
look
what's
like
new
there
about
is any
this election.
What I was trying to say. I mean, what is new, really? I mean, if there is any new.
Yes. The first thing that is new about this election is introduction of the Nur-Otan primaries. And I don't know if you followed this. It's a new platform that sort of provides social lift for Nur-Otan members from different regions to be able to sort of participate in party list elections. So I think that's new, and that reminds me of previous sort of attempts with 100 Faces of Kazakhstan, which tries to involve sort of local people to be closer to the regime and so forth, co-opt them. Second thing that is new about this election is we've observed how independent observers became the most prominent voices in 2019 presidential elections. They've been introduced quite serious changes in relation to their participation this time, in particular how those organizations that should participate in elections should be officially registered by state. They need special permission for election observation. You are no longer allowed to take photos, videos during election observation, and any online streaming is now prohibited, which sort of kills the only voice of dissent that would be possible to hear during the upcoming parliamentary elections. But I think Tokayev understands the fact that a regime doesn't listen to people anymore, and he introduced this concept during his last address to the nation, which is a listening state. But I think it's really about listening state with the deaf regime. And while he talks about the dialogue between power and society and how one should sort of empower civil society, he puts quite strict measures to silence those independent voices.
Yeah, okay. Darkhan, is there anything really briefly you want to add into this in terms of the what's new in this election, if there is anything new?
There were amendments to the election law in 2018, which brought some changes, essential changes. For example, so starting from 2007, we are using party system, you know, and the party system Kazakhstan is using is like closely, so you only vote for party, not for candidates. I mean, you cannot say, I want this person from your party, which is non-democratic techniques. But, I mean, we are used to that. But starting from 2018, I mean, we are having the first election after those amendments. Starting from this year or so, the next year, we are going to use that system. The party system is close lead to local councils, which is terrible for ordinary citizens who want to participate in political life of their region. I mean, so on national level, people had no chance to participate in the lawmaking process if they didn't like any party. Now we are just depriving those rights for local councils. The next thing, exit polls. These amendments brought some difficult formal requirements for polling companies that do exit polls. And this year, two independent polling companies said that they were rejected from the right of doing exit polls. Exit polls are very important because they could show how far the government went with rigging the results of the election. Second, they would reveal the real turnout of the election. Usually the regime, they would just draw some figures, and we have to accept that. And the third moment, we only know the results for national level and for regional level. We don't know the results for district or for voting station, which could also give us a hint how far the government went with rigging. Because if we say the government is rigging the results, they would have to falsify the results for a village, for a voting station, which would be extremely difficult. Because say I'm a village dweller, I live in a village of 200 people, and I know all of them are angry at Nazarbayev's regime. But if they have to reveal the results for my village, they have to falsify it and say that 80% of voters voted for Nur Otan, and I would know for sure the results are rigged. I mean, there are many questions to that. And the government learned lessons from the last election as well. In the last elections, observers played a huge role. They were key players in raising the people to protest the election because they were saying like, oh, you say Kosan got 16%, but in this station, he got 47%. In this station, he won the Tokayev. And this year, they're complicating the process of registering observers. In the past, any NGO could send their representatives to be an observer. This year they said, no, not every NGO can do that. So we have some form requirements, and they have to prove that they are eligible. You know what does
so
it
what,
mean?
It means that Darhan, what are all these changes mean?
I mean, they have complicated the process for independent observers, for
okay.
the people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the past, although we couldn't elect the right majlis members, we could vote for real people in local council
mm-hmm.
elections.
Mm-hmm.
But starting from this election, we cannot vote for a real person even in local council election.
Mm.
We will vote for Nuratom Party.
Mm.
And this is important because not all six parties have their local office in all districts
right.
in
yeah.
Kazakhstan. Only Nuratom has.
Yeah, so let's do this. So Nazarbayev and Tokayev, so what they have been doing in these election process, we know that there won't be free and fair election, but what are they doing and what are at stake for them and for the country? Let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Dr. Lukan Cesci, Senior Lecturer in Central Asian Studies at the Glasgow University, Sofia Do-Boley, PhD candidate researching the legitimation, authoritarian durability, and politics in Central Asia, Darhan Omirbekov, Senior Journalist with Radio Free Upgrade Liberty's Kazakh service, Radio Azatik, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Upgrade Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Bruce is joining us from Prague. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free Upgrade Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the upcoming elections in Kazakhstan. So let's do this. Bruce, let me bring you in. So Nazarbayev, you know, the family, we know Dariga is in the field contesting for the election. Other than that, have you seen any role Nazarbayev is playing in this actively, in this election?
Publicly, not very much.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, he's been kind of a low profile all this year. You know, he was in a bunker or something, as far as we could figure out for a while. So, no, I don't think he needs to very much anymore.
Hmm.
You know, everyone knows Nuratanti's party.
Hmm.
He doesn't have to do a lot of campaigning. And there's nothing, I don't see that there would be much for him to gain by actually going out and saying vote Nuratan. It might even be a negative in the long run. So he's kept a pretty low profile, and really even Tokayev too. I mean, aside from the usual guarantees of free and fair elections, I haven't seen him, although you would figure that he wouldn't say anything anyway. As president, you're not, technically, you're not supposed to be campaigning for a party to begin with, I don't think. So
he's not doing anything. I mean, now I'm talking about Tokayev. So he's also stepped aside and let the process take shape. This is what's happening.
I mean, maybe Darhan Sonia has seen more stuff than I have, but I haven't seen Tokayev making a lot of statements about the elections other, you know, than what I said, that there should be free and fair and everyone should be able to campaign and, you know, the usual citing what the rules say anyway.
Yeah, can I just jump in for a second, Mohammed?
Sure. Also, look, I mean, yeah, while you are responding, also, I had a very related question on that. So it looks like if we take Bruce's comments into account, Tokayev and Nazarbayev both really not actively, you know, participating in this process. So especially about Tokayev. So he's not even doing anything to put his own stamp on this election, because this is the first election that's happening under his supervision, to say. He's not really doing anything about this.
But I think that it's important that we recognize that with the leadership change of last year's, the power structure has changed. This is no longer a personalist regime when you have a very powerful president at the center of any decision making. This is becoming more and more of an oligarchy, to say in some sense. So the participation in the regime is expanding a little bit. So it seemed to me that by having what they usually call an hegemonic party, like Nuratan, the party which becomes the hands and the voice and the eyes of the regime of the territory, you then create a more oligarchic structure. So this election, and especially when you consider all of the amendments that the Dahlan and Sofia have mentioned before, it is another step in the transformation of oligarchy. I mean, Some, to me, it's much more interesting to see the dynamics at play in the Nurotan primaries rather than the election itself, because then you really see the intra-elite distribution patterns and how power gets distributed. The election, what was going to happen on January the 10th, I think, is going to be just a pantomime. So this is very interesting. The president does not need to intervene, but the president in this particular structure has got a very particular role. So what we're seeing is, I mean, even if we talk about authoritarian stability and stagnation, things are never exactly the same. They move slowly, more slowly than they would in other kind of landscape. But to me, Kazakhstan has been changing ever since Nazarbayev left, not in the listening state thing, but the nature of the authoritarian power, the legitimation part, the media control, the participation part, have actually become more oligarchic rather than personally. So this is not just for academics. This is something which has got a very significant impact on the daily life of the people. And the rise of Nurotan, the confirmation of Nurotan, if you want, as the most significant political party on the territory, is a manifestation of this consideration, to my mind.
So what I'm understanding from your points, Dr. Luka, is yes, you know, there is kind of change, but not really change in terms of what the people's expectation and anticipations were by Nazarbayev stepping aside. But is Tokayev doing anything about his own future? I mean, this was my question. Like, this is the first election that's happening under his supervision. I mean, in the previous conversations, we spoke a lot about how long, for example, Tokayev will want to stay under Nazarbayev's shadow. I mean, this is one opportunity, right, when the election happens. I mean, you try to put your own stamp in some way so that there's a future for you as a Tokayev. I mean, is it happening or it is still a dream?
Well, you will have to have a close look at how a faction into Nurotan are evolving. If there is a more pro-Tokayev, anti-Tokayev, I haven't really looked at that. But to me, now, not only we have a more, and that was the argument that Bruce and I have had for years about the transformation of the transition and how we have a team and that supervises the transition and stuff. This is becoming more day-to-day politics, to my mind. But you need to close look. I mean, when we see, and Sophia was perfect before, when she mentioned this has become about the elite, intra-elite assessment of the power. Exactly what we're seeing now. This is a day in which we can see how the power balances, the infights are happening with other regimes. The unfortunate thing, and that doesn't change, is that for the people, nothing will change. Uh-huh. The people are still excluded systematically by these debates. Uh-huh. And this is something which is the only unchanged thing. Everything else has changed to a much lower extent, but it's changed nonetheless.
Interesting. Okay, Sophia, about what's that? So it looks like from your point earlier you made, from Bruce and Dr. Lucas, the authorities are very much in control in the country. Then what is it? Why, even for the purpose of show, why they wouldn't allow just one or two opposition parties to contest in this election? What would be wrong? I mean, why they are concerned about this? I mean, if there would be one or two seats going to the opposition party, it might help the authorities to legitimize the outcome of the election compared to what is going to happen on January 10th at this time without any opposition party being on the ballot.
As a couple of days ago, President Lukashenko sort of wished Kazakhstan to have a stable parliamentary election. I think that exactly answers your question. There is no even expectation of that change or of any sort of a variety of political choices or alternatives, because alternative might be too dangerous. And sometimes the opposition, systemic opposition candidate might gather all the votes just because party or candidate stands against everybody else. And the negation and minimizing of those risks, that's what I think the current regime is trying to achieve, and doing that successfully. But I think what they're missing here is that state efficiency and state deficiencies that they sort of showed during the pandemic times, and how regime failed to really provide good support, would still show the cracks within the system. and people would be discontent. And if they don't have formal channels where they can sort of voice their grievances, they will go to the streets or they do something else.
Bruce, do you have any other opinion about this? I mean, why just to allow opposition parties? They know that they are not in a position to win lots of seats, that they are going to create problem in the parliament.
This is interesting. Well, you know, they lost their front man for an opposition party, of course. You know, when the Nationwide Social Democratic Party pulled out, they were supposed to be the opposition party that I'm sure the government and authorities planned on pointing to and saying, we do have opposition, here they are. But they've dropped out of the race. You know, and I think that's probably one of the biggest disappointments, because if you remember, that was one of the things that Takayev was speaking about, you know, a year and a half ago, was that he wanted there to be opposition parties in politics. He was talking about how healthy that was for the political system, how good it would be for Kazakhstan. They made a big deal of having this big council that was formed, and they were supposed to figure out how they were going to chart out a route to get genuine opposition parties into the politics of the country. You know, and like I said, in the end, it was their first chance to show that they were keeping their word and having an opposition party, and they didn't come through. You know, Darkhan certainly would know who Nurzhan Altaev is. He was a candidate, he was a member of the Nur Otan party until late November, and he said that he wanted to form a legitimate, genuine opposition party, and he was kicked out of the party in a couple days, and I haven't heard of him since. You know, so that just shows how sincere some of these claims are about wanting there to be opposition parties in elections.
Is there any reason that they to be frightened about presence of opposition parties in the parliament? I mean, just to put yourself in the position of Tokayev, I mean, what would be your really worried about having a couple of opposition members in the parliament?
Immediately, I wouldn't be worried at all, because the politics are so entrenched. Further down the road, I would be worried for the reasons that Sophia mentioned, that you don't want to provide an opportunity for a charismatic figure or party to emerge and start getting support among the people, because that might prove your own undoing come next election time or maybe even sooner. You know, so they're paranoid about this kind of stuff. I mean, no one knows better than the people in government how the government is performing. A lot of people can complain about it, but they know how bad things are in some sectors, you know, and so they have a lot of reason to not let a figure emerge who could tap into the discontent that exists within a lot of segments of the society.
Mm-hmm. Okay, terrific. I know there are a lot to be discussed yet, but we need to really wrap up the discussion. We are way out of time. Just the final thoughts here. So the process which is happening on January 10th. So what is this, the entire process is going to mean for Kazakhstan? I mean, we do not expect much change to take place. What would be the implications of that going forward?
I'm going to be really short, if you want, Mohammed.
Sure, yeah.
I think that this is an exercise in regime building. They have to reassess how the stagnation stability connection works, and they have to redistribute places of power in the parliament. So this is not a democratic exercise, not an election, just an exercise in regime building. To me, this is important, I mean, because we can see it will require a lot of study, actually, but we can actually work out how the configuration of the parliament meets the configuration of if there are intra-Nur-Otan factors. But there is nothing beyond that.
Okay. What about the others? I mean, just to rephrase my question, it's not expected any major change to take place as a result of this election, as a result of this exercise, or the way things are run in Kazakhstan going forward after this election. But how do you see the day after the election in Kazakhstan? Sophia, go ahead.
I look at this election as a symbolic spectacle, as what Luca mentioned, as regime building or regime legitimation, because you don't want to associate your rule, even if you're autocratic leader, that you gained power illegitimately or violently. So you do want to still engage or imitate this democratic performance. I think I suspect that after the day election happens, they would introduce some sort of lockdown or pandemic again. And they're trying to postpone as much as possible. That's why a lot of political authorities are making quite specific claims, saying that there will be no lockdown in December, but they don't really say anything so far about January. So I think once the nation will wake up, they might face another lockdown like we do in the UK. Thank you.
Interesting, interesting. Okay, Darkhan and Bruce, what are your thoughts on that? Also, yes, of course, we are talking about the what's at stake for Kazakhstan as a result of this election, but also what's at stake for opposition there?
I'm going to kind of stick with what I wrote a couple of days ago about this, is that I think what this election proves, at least to the, what we know so far, since Nazarbayev stepped down and handed over power to Tokayev, is that the system of governance hasn't changed. But I think the perception of a lot of people that it should, that was a moment when the government should have, there was a clear opportunity to take the country in a slightly different direction, which they would, most many people would consider more productive, is being lost. You know, we saw there's a lot more opposition. We can't get out on the street right now. It's not very organized. It's probably not very big, but there's certainly a lot more opposition to the Kazakh government now than there was, you know, 2 years ago when Nazarbayev was still in power and we didn't know exactly when he was going to leave. So, you know, this is another demonstration that the authorities have promised something, like they promised it would be easier to demonstrate and hold public gatherings. They promised there would be an opposition in this election, you know, and they haven't gone forward with it. So they'll get away with it. The results, you know, like we've been saying, they're all known. I think it'll hit at the government, the authorities' credibility further down the road. Okay. And it'll just be another straw to throw on the camel's back, you know, as far as discontent.
So, Darkhan, what are you looking at? Where your eyes are as the country is headed to the election?
Nothing will change, but I'm afraid that in the long term, it will radicalize people who are unhappy with the government. I mean, as I was already talking, the people are just deprived from the last tool, the legitimate tool to delivering their demands and wishes and messages to the statehood, to the government. And now they are left behind and they have nothing to do other than going to streets and crush everything. I mean, one day they might do that and the government will have nothing to stop them other than using the guns, as they did in Janavuzin. From the regime's perspective, every election is a challenge for their stability. And they see this election as a task, as bridge crossing. And if they cross this bridge smoothly, I think the Bauran Baybek, the second secretary of Nur-Otan Party, will be gifted or will gain power in the elite. And that will be the end for the regime. But for the people, I mean, in the short term, they will do nothing but generate the anger.
Okay, I think, you know, there are lots of other points to be discussed, but I think let's end it here. Thank you very much, Darkhan Omerbekov, senior journalist with Radio Free Europe Liberties, Kazakh Service Radio Azadtik, Dr. Lukan Cheshi, senior lecturer in Central Asian Studies at the Glasgow University, Sofia Dubolay, a PhD candidate researching the legitimation, authoritarian durability and politics in Central Asia, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe Liberties, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Ready for Your Freedom Liberties media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington. Until next week, bye-bye.